Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to a new episode of Talk Back. This time around, I got the chance to sit down and talk with hip-hop recording artist KJ52 to discuss his new album, Dangerous. But before we go ahead and play that interview for you, we're going to go ahead and play a track off the album, and that track is called Shake 'Em Up.
We know that the God of the universe loves us so much that he wants to not only give us a home in eternity, but he wants to utilize us and use us while we're on this planet. And the Bible says that Jesus says, I have come.
How are you?
What up, my man?
Always good to catch up with you. Always a pleasure to have you on the other end of the line.
I think your middle name is Excellence, isn't that right? Calvin Excellence Moore?
Something like, yes, my middle name is.
The E stands for.
Only my mother exactly can use my middle name, though. Only my mother can use my middle name.
Calvin Extra Professional Moore. There we go. How about that one?
So, got the new album.
I'm just going to warn you, I am grocery shopping.
Oh, you know what? I think, okay, I got to get used to it with you, because I think the first time that I interviewed you, you were running to catch a train. You were running through a train
station. I was.
Station. Yeah, so, I got a long memory, KJ, so let's
you
see.
You're doing good.
Yeah, so each of our interviews, we should try to see where KJ is at the time that that we're doing the interview.
The funny thing is, I didn't have my kids, so I was like, you know what? This might be the very best time for me to absolutely do an interview.
That works. Wait, are you at Whole Foods? Are you one of those people?
Am I a what?
Are you at Whole Foods?
You know, I wish we had a Whole Foods. My town doesn't, but I am definitely an organic guy. So we don't have Whole Foods in my town, which is kind of lame, but I do shop organic. So, yes, I'm in a wholesale place, and there is food.
You're losing your street cred. I don't know any hip-hop artists who are organic.
You know, we're on the come up. Ever since Badu made Common switch it up, it's okay to be organic. At least that's what I tell myself.
You should do a track about organic eating.
Actually,
of course,
you know,
if you do a track about organic food, people are gonna be like, "Man, he don't sell off. I don't know what happened."
They're like, "What is this? A dead president's album? What's going on here?"
That's hilarious. But obviously, you're calling to talk about your new album, Dangerous, coming out on April 3rd. I mean, at this time, the album hasn't come out, but obviously, you've seen me tweeting about it because for me, this is like KJ52 par excellence. I think this is no problem. Fantastic. Obviously, you know, and we've talked in the past. We talked about my article, and I've been very open about how I was critical about some albums before the last one, and now this one's even better than that one. So, again, I'm loving the themes that are coming out of it. I love tracks like Superhero and Do the Bill Cosby. I think like everybody has a silly, crazy, crazy track. But talk a little bit about kind of what's going on before we talk specifically about the album. Talk a little bit about what's kind of gone on with KJ52 in the last couple of years.
Sure. In the last couple of years, you know, I've been through all kinds of, I want to say, label drama, because it's not really the label per se. It's more of EMI problems. Some may or may not know EMI, which is the parent company. Got bought out, then went bankrupt, then got bought out again, then went bankrupt again. I think at one point Citibank owned EMI, so the running joke was that I could go like cash a check and check my royalty statement and get a lollipop for my kids all at the same place. but because of those problems really delayed my follow-up record, which is kind of the reason why it's been so long between albums. So in that regard, you know, I guess the time off was good in some regards, and obviously, you know, it's well, I guess they say it's always good. All things God works together for the good. But that being said, that's one of the things. But I, you know, I haven't really gone anywhere. I'm still, you know, very steady on the road. I've also in the last couple of years, you know, just started to see God open up some doors, the things that I've prayed for a long time. You know, expanding into other roles, not just being known as, you know, just as KJ the MC or the rapper or whatever, being known, you know, I do hosting now, I do speaking. Honestly, man, in the last couple of years, it's funny, with all that drama, God really still provided in a lot of ways. You know, a lot of the things I prayed for years finally came to reality. So.
Okay.
You know, I can't complain. I'm still here. You can't get rid of me. I'm like a It's like I'm like that cousin at the reunion. He keeps thinking I'm gone, but I'm there.
Oh, there he is again. Don't look him in the eye. Don't look him in the eye. There he is.
I thought he got locked up. He got locked
got
up.
Got out.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so, okay, yeah, so it's been about 3 years. I think 5-2 Television came out in 2009. Now it's 2012, so, yeah, 3 years.
Yeah.
So, before we talk about the album, I was just talking to somebody else who released an album today, Doc Watson over at Reflection Music Group. They just released RMG today, so we're having this conversation on March 27th at this point. And, you know, I keep in contact with a lot of the guys that are doing hip hop, you know, Reach Records, RMG, all that stuff. And I was just telling Doc Watson, I said, you know, I feel like KJ has been around for a long time, and a lot of changes have happened. I was like, you know, I would love to see him collaborate with, you know, with a Pro or a Chad Jones or a Cannon or a Lecrae or whatnot. Can you talk a little bit about how the industry has changed around you, what you feel your role has been in kind of bringing that to the forefront, and what role you still feel like you play in the growing Christian hip-hop field?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of what, you know, somebody asked me a couple of years back, like, where do you see this going? And I said, well, I said, if anything, I see the rise of the independent artist. You know, essentially, mainly because obviously the internet has on one hand destroyed everything, but on the other hand, it's completely leveled the playing field. So, in my particular case, I mean, I'm still doing a lot of what I was doing before. You know what I mean? Like it really hasn't changed. I mean, I guess if anything, maybe the crowds are bigger and the platform's bigger, but it's kind of the same thing I decided on 10 plus years ago, and that was, you know, I had a clear-cut idea of what I wanted to go after, and I made moves to do that, better or worse, I guess you could say, depending on who you're talking to. But, I definitely think it's a great time in the sense that we certainly have a lot more acceptance, you know. I think case in point, last year at this time, you only really had 3 major tours going out, that being Winter Jam, Rock and Worship Show, Rock and Roll Worship Show, and then a tour called the Revolve Tour. Each one of those tours all had a Christian hip-hop artist on it. Case in point, myself on Winter Jam, Lecrae on Rock and Roll Worship Show, and then Revolve Tour having Group on Crew. So you didn't see that when I started 10-plus years ago. You know, we were still struggling for just crumbs off the table. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Back then, I was constantly having to apologize for this, that, and third for our genre. I was having to, you know, and I say this with no embarrassment or apology, but having to dumb down in a lot of ways. And a lot of it was the idea of being a bridge builder, where so many in the past had been bridge burners. But, you know, and some of that was the artistic aspect, but part of it was just learning how to speak articulately and putting aside my backpack, if you will, to you know, I guess you could say sacrificing on one end to get something at later end. And that's the reason why I'm still here. And some, I mean, I credit all to God, of course. But anyway, all that being said, there is absolutely a more legitimacy to our art form. There's less. Well, that's really great. You know, there's more. People don't even think in those terms
right
now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because of the fact that, in some ways, the 30-somethings and the 40-somethings are running things. You know, they're in the positions of power that 10, 15 years ago, they were just too young or too starting out to be in the positions of power. So, case in point, you see the trickle down from that. I think what's happened on an independent tip with, you know, some of the groups you had mentioned is that now the music's way more accessible. So when I first started, man, we had to scour through some tiny Christian rap magazine and send off a check and hope to God they send the tape back, you know, whereas now it's a click of a button.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if our scene has grown that much per se, you know what I'm saying? I don't know if we're selling that much more or we have, you know, I don't know if the crowds are necessarily bigger or any of those signs, I just think it's way more accessible. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So all that being said, you know, like when we see artists show up on iTunes and things of that nature, I don't know if necessarily those artists are selling more than they used to. It just, I'll be honest with you, it's just that the Christian hip hop buyer, the core buyer, he buys. He supports. Hmm. And he gets digital. You know what I'm saying? He gets
right.
The digital world. Whereas a lot of these genres, they don't. And so, you know, when physical product goes out the window, people just stop buying it. They didn't necessarily transfer to buying digital. They just stopped buying it. So hence the sales take a nosedive. Whereas
I do, sometimes wonder about albums coming out too. Like they chart on iTunes. And
yeah.
You know, I get a lot of albums and some of them I'm like, I probably wouldn't have given this as high a review as my reviewer did, but okay. And it'll chart.
Yeah.
But then I'll look and I'll go, well, nothing else came out today. So that's why it's number one. That's why it's number two.
And you see a lot of them, they fall off really quick.
Yeah.
So really what that means is you have a very fanatical, digital savvy fan base. And the difference between that and the mainstream is that the mainstream, they just bootleg. They just don't buy, period. So the Christian, you know, for the Christian hip hop buyer, it's not just like, you're not just buying the music. You're making like a vote. It's like supporting your favorite political candidate. You know what I'm saying? So
gotcha.
They're there at 12:01 when the clock strikes and they have no problem buying it on iTunes and putting it on their iPod or their iPhone. So here's, and I'm not saying these things as a detriment. I'm just saying these things are awesome in my opinion, because it's almost a testament to the people of God, because it's like saying, we won't rip our artists off. We will support, not just because of the music, but the fact that we believe in what they're doing as men of God, women of God, et cetera, et cetera. So, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't want to be the balloon popper either. I just
sometimes
we have to be realistic. That's all.
I like it when someone is real, and obviously you've frequented our site. You know what our site is all about, and we are about. I think that Christians should be truth tellers, or say, hey, you know what? It's great that people are doing this. It's great that it's on iTunes, but let's talk about what it really is. Let's not overstate our case and basically become liars because we really like an artist. Let's say, hey, it charted, and next week it wasn't on there again, but it was really cool that it made it to number two because
a lot of people
probably saw it. So,
right.
Well,
somebody asked me the same thing the other day, and I said, well, I almost compare it to like the end of the music industry as like the proverbial, you know, bomb dropped and the industry has just been destroyed. You know what I'm saying? It's like the Book of Eli. And the only people that really survived that bomb dropping were those that built bunkers. And the really niche market music, you know, where you have a fanatical fan base, they built little bunkers over what they do. And because of that, you know, you're actually seeing what is most people are referring to as the new model. You know what I'm saying? That's the new, it's like the last man standing, I guess, you know, which I think, again, is, in my opinion, is a testament to the people of God. And, you know, you have a really strong 20-something college-aged, you know, fan base that will buy the records on iTunes and they will come out to the shows and they're passionate about what God is doing through the genre. And it's a very multicultural, multi-ethnic fan base, you know?
Yeah.
And, like I said, you know, in my opinion, it's a great thing. I think it's a great thing. So.
Now, I just want you to realize, I feel like you just quietly compared yourself to Denzel Washington with that whole record.
I will. Yeah, exactly right.
He's a blind
man. I wish I could do a good Denzel. Be like, my man.
That guy doesn't know me. Let's talk about the new album.
Well,
obviously, I followed you.
Can I say one thing in regards to all that? Is that I'll be honest with you. I actually don't have a strong digital fan base. I'm actually the least downloaded artist on Tooth and Nail Records.
Huh.
And part of that is because you know, I think a while back I said, I love the Christian hip hop genre, but I'm not just going to be contained to just that. And my goal was always to kind of take it beyond that. And, you know, what's happened over the years is that as Christian retail has shrunk, you know, physical retail has shrunk, it's actually hurt my record sales, because I still had a fan base that actually went to Christian bookstores and bought the CDs. Well, as that shrunk, you know, my sales shrunk. It didn't hurt me from a live perspective. I still work. But, you know, my sales dropped off dramatically compared to where they used to be.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying? So, just to knock me down a few notches, that's what I want to do.
KJ52 is nobody. You're lucky I'm interviewing you, KJ.
Exactly. I'll slip you the fiver later.
But let's talk a little bit about the new album, though, because, I mean, hopefully this will kind of remedy some of that situation. Dangerous, I mean, I've been following your career since 7th Avenue, you know, way back in the day when you were on Essential Records, and then things changed to being on Up Rock, and now you've been on BEC for a number of years now. But having access to your career over that time, having seen you perform live in Pontiac, Michigan, and I've noticed things that you've done. Obviously, you started off doing the, you know, you started off doing, you know, straight up hip hop, and you kind of, obviously the Eminem comparisons, you know, were thrown out there because you released a couple tracks to that effect. But then you did things like Soul Purpose, where you kind of teamed up with Todd Collins, and there was singing back before singing on a hook was popular. Now it's really popular. And then you did Peace of Mind, which was kind of like a rock rap fusion. Before that became super popular. And now with Dangerous, again, looking back over your entire career, I see some of those elements of like Soul Purpose and Peace of Mind coming out again. There's definitely a rock vibe to some of the tracks. Obviously, you're authentically hip-hop. You kind of went back to that with Behind the Music, Yearbook, and 5-2 Television for sure. And that's still there on Dangerous. But I definitely see more of the musical creativity on this project that I think other projects have not necessarily boasted. Can you talk a little bit about why the change? Why the direction?
You know, I mean, it's a multiple things. I think I've always done singing per se. The difference was is that we'd usually go out and get somebody to do it for me. So I wrote a lot of my choruses. I sang a lot of them. You just never really heard my vocals on there. Mainly out of confidence. I just didn't have the confidence to really put myself out there. And honestly, I just wasn't that good. So I always tried to go with the best foot forward. You know, over time, I think me learning how to make tracks, make beats and stuff like that helped a lot, learning melody. And, you know, a lot of us rap because we can't sing and because we have no sense of melody. So you kind of have to learn that or de-learn what you learned as an MC. But I got to give a lot of credit to my producers, you know, Todd, Ted T and Aaron Sprinkle were two guys who essentially said, that's what's been put on your heart. Why don't you sing it? And me being very, you know, not confident, they were good enough and encouraging enough to go, here, try this, or hey, follow this, or listen to this, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say there isn't some studio magic in there, because obviously there is.
Right.
That goes on with so much stuff these days. But I don't know. I think it's just a combination of all that. It's just time, getting better, learning, having the right people. You know, a guy like Ted T is just a phenomenal producer, and me and Aaron have been doing stuff for years. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's all those things. And I'll be honest with you, part of it was like going, look, this is my 7th solo. I better do something different this time around, or, you know what I mean? Or people are just going to be, you know, I mean, every record is a reinvention, but much less being around for this long, it's beyond a reinvention. You know, people write me off, or have, you know, some of the fan base has written me off years ago for whatever reason, just for the sheer nature of the more you do music, that's just what happens, you know? I mean, you're going to be hard-pressed to find anybody that, you know, that's made it 12-plus years that doesn't hear the same things I'm hearing. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's part of it. Part of it was the challenge. I love if you've kind of thought, well, this is who he is, then I love to put that on its head. That's the stuff that like excites me.
Okay.
You know what
now,
I mean?
One of the things that was not sent along with the album, I still need to connect with your PR person, whose name I'm not going to say because I don't want everybody just emailing her. But
good man.
People listen to my podcast so they can figure out who they have to call in order to get through to people. Yeah. either way, who did you collaborate with on this album? Did you collaborate with any artists on this album?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the other thing is that this is the first record in a long time, probably since Seventh Avenue, where there is no rock band collaboration. You know what I'm saying? Like, because my focus was squarely set on, you know, beyond just the genre, not that I would ever leave it, but I'm saying I always did rock band, pop group collaborations. But this time around, I don't know. I really polled my fans and I wanted to know what they were looking for. So yeah, you have everybody from Lecrae to Canton Jones to Rayma Soul to Dre Murray. Sizzle is on there. I'm blanking out. There was more songs. We just had to cut it down to 12 songs. It was actually a lot more collaboration. I'm trying to think of the other. I think that was it as far as the hip hop collaboration. Oh, George Moss, of course. My guy travels with me. So yeah, I mean, this is the first record that I've had no rock bands, and it wasn't necessarily I set out to do that, but part of it was going, well, if it's a rock song, you're expecting the rock band on it. So why don't I sing that part and just really screw you up? So on the other hand, part of it is like being a painter, he steps back from his painting sometimes and goes, I'm missing a tone here in the painting. What's the color I'm missing? Well, for me, it's the same way with the music. When I did Shake 'Em Up, I needed somebody gruff, you know, a gruff voice on there. And Sizzle in my head was the perfect, you know, it's a perfect match for that. But all these things came out of relationships. Like, these aren't just people I'm flipping through a Rolodex and dialing a number. I mean, like, these are people that I honestly know, I've built with over the years. You know, case in point, the song with Lecrae. I mean, we had talked about doing a song for years. It just didn't work out, but in this case it was like, well, if we are going to do something, why not do something that nobody talks about, you know, racial issues in the church or in the world, you know, in the world or in hip-hop for that matter. And if that's the thing that people are clamoring for, at least I should say among my fan base, why not take a prominent black rapper and a prominent white rapper and talk about what's going on white and black in the church and in the culture and in the music, and take it from there. And I know that was something he was passionate about, so it made sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, all the collaborations made sense. You know, the song Speed of Light, well, that's because me and Rayma both have the same denominational background. Speed of Light actually raises money for missionaries' vehicles, so the song made sense. You know, the one with Dre Murray, he actually texted me and said, hey, what do I got to do to get on your album? And the funny thing I thought of was I literally been thinking of that song going, it just needs somebody with, you know, some type of deeper voice. I'll be honest, the Southern stuff is a stretch for me. You know what I mean? Like, it's a stretch for me vocally.
Okay.
So to help, it helps to have those guys on there. And, you know, George Moss, that's just, you know, that's my dude. He travels with me, so it made sense for that. Anyway, all those made sense. Canton, you know, I was on his record. I've known Canton for a long time. We're both Florida boys.
You know, it's funny, as we're talking, a video talking about your collaborations just hit Facebook. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I guess
that's
the people
funny.
Who are promoting your new album are their ears must have been burning. They're
yep.
like, oh, that's kind of cool. I'll have to look at that when
they're
we're
finally,
done.
They're doing their job, dang it.
Yeah, they are. They're on it. So let's talk about a couple of the tracks that I'm pretty excited about, and you can talk about anyone you're really excited about anyway. I really like Superhero, and I really like Do the Bill Cosby, especially on the latter one, just because of the impression of Bill Cosby.
I thought that was funny.
Is that
you? You know, there's a story behind that song, right? I'm sorry.
Well, tell the story.
There's a very real story. It wasn't just KJ being stupid for the sake of it, though I wouldn't put that past me. I do this business seminar called Get Motivated. Thank you. This business seminar called Get Motivated Seminars. It's a business seminar for anywhere between 10 to 20,000 business people, not necessarily a Christian business seminar. It's got a faith element, but that's not it. I mean, it's guys like Laura Bush, Rudy Giuliani, depending on the town, there'll be like a local celebrity coach, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, Cosby's on it. And he usually went after me when I would do this, because I do about 5-10 minutes to get the crowd moving.
Gotcha.
And
it's one of those kind of events. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a really crazy sort of setup, because they brought me in like 6 years ago. They said, we need somebody to make this crowd move in a span of 5 minutes. Can you do that? I was like, you're singing my tune. So anyway, suffice to say, I've been rocking that for a while. And it's cool too, because, you know, I think sometimes I get like the youth group tag. People say, oh, KJ's just for the church. He's for little white boy youth group kids. And
right.
I kind of want to be like, okay, well, there's 20,000 unchurched business people here right now. So I guess maybe it's not just for them, but I digress. The point of what I'm trying to get at is Cosby went after me. He requested to meet me. And the next time I was supposed to meet him, I accidentally used his bathroom to go shave. Walked out and he was sitting on the couch. And I didn't know what to do. I was like, this is not how I wanted to meet this guy. Suffice to say, he was very gracious. He sat me down. He said, you're the religious rapper guy, right? And I said, yeah. He said, you know, you bring the joy out of people. And I never heard it put like that. He said, there's something different that brings the joy out of people in what you do. Suffice to say, at the end of this whole talk, I felt like I was Theo and he was Cliff. He ends it, you know, he had this whole plan to tell me, which was that I needed a TV show on TBS, which was quite off the wall, and not what I was expecting when I was going to get sat down with Cosby. Anyway, long story, it ended, it was over, I walked out, I watched him on stage, he was doing his Bill Cosby dance. I was like, one good turn deserves another. The song was born, and my impression was born.
Nice.
that is
there you go.
Story.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't even know what else to say from there, but I thought it was just such a weird, funny, amazing experience.
Uh-huh.
I thought it deserved a song. And you know, I mean, come on, who doesn't love Kaz? He's the Kaz. And the dance is even funnier because half the time I can't finish the song when people are doing it because I'm dying laughing so hard on stage. But, yeah, so, yeah, I tried to, honestly, this record, I was really conscious of not making it too silly. You know what I mean? Even though that is my humor.
Right.
I just wanted to be, you know, poignant. It's so weird what people gravitate to in your music. You know, I could do something that's heartfelt and hip hop and skull crushing. And then I do some dumb song that took me less than 3 seconds about some ridiculous topic. And that's what I end up doing years later. But it is what it is.
Yes, sir.
It is what it is.
I love stories like that. That's why I think I love interviewing people. I mean, because, you know, I'm totally a name dropper when it comes to my friends. It's I'm on the line with KJ52. What? But for me, it's kind of normal at this point because I've done it so much. But I think why I still like doing it, obviously, you know, because you know it's necessary to get on the line and kind of talk up your new project and all that. But to hear stories like that, because I often look over the 4 years of running this site now, and one, looking back and going, wow, this lasted more than a week. That's cool. But
right.
just the respect we've garnered, the rooms I've been able to enter, and people who have spoke highly about something that, honestly, I run from my house. It's not
right.
But I've been asked to go places. So to hear things like, you know, hey, I was doing this event, and then I came out of the bathroom, and there's Bill Cosby sitting there. It's very reminiscent of my experience. You know, just kind of like, wow, how did I get here, God? Wow, who would have ever thought you would bring me to be sitting in a room across the table from, you name it.
Right.
I think that God uses moments like that to kind of sharpen us and change us and come up with crazy songs for our albums and
yeah.
whatnot. Talk a little bit about Superhero, though, because I like the theme. It was, quote-unquote, gimmicky without being gimmicky. You know what I mean?
Sure. Absolutely.
Talk about that song. How did that kind of come about?
I think initially the idea was that, I think it was during the summertime when just so many, like, superhero movies were out, you know? It's always like Hollywood ran out of ideas, and so they just kept opening their comic books. But I guess at the core of that, it made me go, well, there's got to be a reason why these movies are still popular. Well, obviously, definitely amongst boys, there's a yearning in our hearts to be larger than life. And hence the reason why grown men still go to these show, you know, movies, and I being one of them. So,
yeah, I was going to say, I know you're going to be there opening night for Avengers. Don't play.
Absolutely. With the cape on. No, I'm just kidding. I think
there's nobody,
you know,
in Avengers with a cape.
I think, you know, I was definitely a comic book nerd. I was nowhere near like the level of some of my friends, but I wanted a track that was like, that was just odd. You know what I'm saying? So like the track that we did had that sort of violin string sample, and it was just, it just felt epic and, you know, out of this world. And then we just started, you know, one night me and Ted were just messing with the song till I think maybe 4 a.m. with this sort of, you know, drop down, breakdown, you know, there's 20 million things going in the song to absolute nothing. And it just felt epic and big. And in my opinion, felt like a comic book in a lot of ways. And so I thought, why don't I just pull all the titles of comics I loved to describe absolutely my superhero. You know what I mean? Like a lot of what I do that I'm passionate about is, I say, representing truth just in a different angle to it. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
The gospel is the gospel is the gospel. We know what that is. A lot of people know what that is. They roll their eyes. But why not do it in a way that has a little bit of a different angle? And for record after record, I've tried to do that with, you know, sometimes with success, sometimes without it. But either way, you keep pushing and pulling at it. And, yeah. So, I mean, any song you're hearing, when you finally hear the final product, by and large, it's been through countless revisions, lyrically, musically, vocally, you name it, you know, emotionally, definitely. You know what I'm saying? So Superhero is really close to my heart just because I think it's just a really cool musical piece. But at the same token, I'll be honest with you, I struggled with the chorus. And the chorus, I really couldn't find what I wanted to sing until I went in there and sang it. Half of these choruses are singing that I'm doing, and it's usually when I was just like frustrated with the song, and boom, you know, something hit my head. I would go, hey, Ted, let me go try this. He was, you know, tremendously encouraging and would tweak. He's the first, one of the first producers I ever worked with that would literally make me constantly rewrite the lyric while I was doing it, like while I was performing it, speaking, you know, recording it. He would say, hey, why don't you try this, just this little phrase, change this little phrase here. You know, all right, what about this? What, can you say this? I don't, you know. So, you know, again, it's just, I was just really blessed to have some really tremendous, you know, people around me. So, yeah.
Well, now, you did say, okay, you know, out of the collaborations, you had a lot of people, but some, not everything was able to be put on the album. Obviously, cuts have to be made,
right.
Stuff is cutting room floor and whatnot. Any plans to release those tracks as kind of B-sides, or we kind of live in this age now of every, you know, major Christian hip-hop artist is doing a studio album where, you know, you have to go on iTunes to buy it, and they're also releasing a free mixtape kind of as a nod and a thank you to fans.
Yeah.
Any plans of doing anything like that in the near future?
Absolutely. Well, I'll be honest with you, the cutdowns weren't my choice. There's just a new rule with EMI. Is that it has to be 11 songs. They force that. I didn't really have any options. Yeah, they won't even let me do interludes anymore. I had a whole theme of interludes that were supposed to go on the record. My original vision for the record was 17 songs. They made me cut it down to 11 plus the bonus of the, you know, go songs. So
So when they say it has to be 11, it can only be 11?
Only be 11. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
This is it's a reflection of where the music industry is, because essentially iTunes will only pay on a certain amount. And so iTunes has essentially forced the labels to cut the songs. The labels have to pay out on the songs. So the more songs that are on there, the more the labels have to pay out, because they're so bankrupt, they're so hurting for cash, they're forcing the artists to essentially cut the songs down to 11, 12, at tops 13, because of that. And I don't know if you notice any of the major mainstream hip-hop releases, you don't see interludes on their records anymore.
Yeah.
What
does that mean? I mean, you said independents kind of coming up.
The independents can go around it, because they aren't attached to a major corporation. So they can essentially do whatever they want to do.
Okay.
So, for instance, if I put an interlude out that doesn't have publishing or any of those royalties, iTunes still has to pay on that song if someone buys it. In the past, if I put an interlude on a CD and you bought the CD, well, the labels don't have to pay on the interlude. They only pay on the actual songs. Does that make sense? Because, essentially, because records are now divvied up per song, it has essentially forced the labels to go, oh, now I got to pay on every song. Normally, that cost would go back to the artist. So, here's the simplest way to make you understand is that copyright by the U.S. law only pays out royalties, publishing or mechanical, on 11 songs. So if you go over, the artist has to pay out the extra.
Gotcha. So you have to pretty much be a really huge artist to release a 17-track album nowadays if you're on a major.
Yeah, and part of it, too, is that, you know, people's appetites for music is much smaller. You know, it's a single-driven market. We all know that. But yeah, big records, the concept of the album or the album experience is gone. You know, the nature of how we digested music 10, 20 years ago, even 30 or 40 years ago, I mean, if someone bought a record, you're not putting that in your car to listen to. You're not putting it on your Walkman to listen to or whatever you had. You have to sit in a room and listen to that record. So what did that make? That made people of the 60s and the 70s and the 50s, they were way more active listeners to music. So the concept of the album came out of that. Well, now, because music is so inundated, there's so much music, people just aren't active listeners. And I know I'm tangenting here, but I guess the best way I can say is that the best memories you have are the memories that you have connected to your senses. So with a CD, you know, you pick up the CD. There's a feel to it. You smell the CD because a new CD has a smell to it. You know, you read the liner notes. You're engaging your visual. Plus, you're hearing it. So almost all your senses are engaged. That's why people were way more connected to their music 80 years ago. Whereas now we've cut out that experience. We've cut off a bunch of our senses. So what does that mean? It just means we have less of a connection to music. You know what I'm saying? Like our senses, our memories are less connected to it. So the only way to really fix that is to add back your senses, i.e. shoot a music video, i.e. get in front of somebody and perform it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I think that's really interesting.
That's why old timers are always sitting there going, well, in my day, you know, we love the album, rah, rah, rah. Well, part of it is because you experienced it on every level. You know what I mean? You can remember when the first time you heard Thriller or whatever your favorite, you know, Low End Theory by Tribe Called Quest. Kids today don't have that same aesthetic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They view music in a sense of hugeity. Yeah, in other words, it was way more about ownership in the 80s, music-wise. It was about having your CD in your collection, and you wore it like a badge of honor, whereas kids don't view music that way. They don't even care about ownership.
Right. And I look at hip-hop from back in the day, like Rapper's Delight. I was like, isn't that song like 27 minutes long?
Yeah, it's like 17 minutes long. Exactly. And it's a great point. And look at it this way. I read this article like 6-7 years ago, and it was said, music is water. And I thought it was the dumbest thing I ever read, and it's funny. It's exactly true. They basically said that music will become what water is to us. So we look at our water bill as a very small bill we pay every month. I would never go to your house and go, can I get a cup of water out of your faucet? And you go, yeah, it'd be $10. You would never say that, right? But if we were at a festival somewhere and you were hot, or we had a sports game, somebody walks by with a $3 bottle of water, you're going to shell the money out and not even think twice about it. That's essentially what music and media has become. So, or I should say to the younger generation. So the younger generation goes, oh, we all own water. You know, we all have access to water. Whereas if you're at a show, no one has a problem copping your CD. This is why CD sales have fallen off. The album has fallen off. It's the way people view music now. Music and media to the younger generation is the same way you and I view water. We all have access to it. We all have a right to it. Yeah, we might pay a small fee, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, for years, the music industry essentially has been able to bottle tap water for $10 a pop. You know what I'm saying? So that's why everyone is saying now, you know, what are the big record deals that happened in the last 5-10 years? It's the Live Nation deals with like Jay-Z and Madonna. Well, those are all based on live performance.
I wonder if
I don't know how I just went off on that tangent, but
this is why I like talking to you, because you tend to know. I mean, like the last time we talked, I had gone off on my rant about how, you know, people like KJ52 get nominated for these awards, and you're like, well, that's because our record labels pay into, you know, this award system, whereas other ones don't.
Yeah,
again, long memory. But I wonder if I don't know if you follow comedy, but I like a guy named Louis C.K.
Yeah.
And he did something that was pretty interesting, where he released a stand-up, you know, comedy special that he did. He did it, you know, one time live. And then he released it online and just kind of trusted that people would kind of pay their own price, so to speak. And
He
ended up raising like over $5 million doing this independently.
Yep.
And he ended up giving away a lot of it. But the idea was, he kind of made it more exclusive in a way. And I'm wondering, in the digital world, this somehow worked. He made something exclusive in a digital world where I can just go on, you know, any torrent site I want and download it for free if I wanted to.
Right.
He has in some way made something seem exclusive in this digital world that we live in, where it's easy to get something, where you kind of feel ownership buying it. And I'm wondering if that's something that the music industry needs to do, like say, hey, you know, we're going to come out with this album. It's digital, yes, but we're only releasing 5,000 copies. After that, it's cut off. And yeah, sure, somebody could upload it to a torrent site, but I think that there might be something to making, you know, I'm not a business guy. I could be talking out of my butt here and it wouldn't work for a million reasons, but I think that having seen it work, someone make something exclusive in an online digital world, is there something that the record companies, the record labels today could do along those lines in order to best benefit themselves and best benefit their artists?
Well, you know, it already happened, but it's not coming from the record labels, because they just, you know, in a lot of ways they are, not all of them, but I mean, they're a dinosaur, you know what I'm saying? So a dinosaur needs a ton of food to survive off of. He can't survive off of food stamps per se, but you see this already with Kickstarter. You know, TFK, The Crutch was a band that was just, you know, their deal just went up with Tooth and Nail. And so this record, they essentially said, fans, help us raise the budget for our record. And they were able to completely pay for their record. And they offered all kinds of incentives. So it was like, you pay this much, the month, you get this sort of incentive. You know, some of it was like tickets, or it was, you know, signed copy of the record, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. So what you're describing actually already is at work. It doesn't always work for every artist. Some of it has to do with, you know, nature of the artist, like what kind of fan base to create. How passionate are your fans for you?
Right.
You know, do they feel like they're a part of the process, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that's really where it comes down to. It's kind of like there was only really one model 10 years ago, and now the models are as diverse as the artists are, as the fan bases are. And yeah, I mean, I remember reading a story about Danger Mouse, who, you know, he had a record shut down by the record labels that he had done with Sparkle Horse. And so essentially what he did is he put out a blank CD and a link to go download it. So fans were buying the record,
you know, they're essentially buying a blank CD, a blank recordable CD with the liner notes, and going and bootlegging it. It was basically his way of getting around the label, which was, in his opinion, stifling his art. And, you know, it really depends on who you're connecting with. It depends on who the artist is. It depends on what the fan base is. You know, I know when I'm in front of a lot of teenagers, I'm not going to sell as many CDs as when I'm in front of a whole nother demographic. But it, you know what I'm saying? But that's why I up other ends, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'll have other stuff to sell on my merch table, because I know a kid might walk to my table with 10 bucks in his hand and could walk away with a CD. And instead he walks away with a stupid pair of sunglasses. But see, I realized that. I realized that 5 years ago, that that's where this was going to go. So I can either be a whiny little artist about it and say, no one loves my art, or I can go, you know what? I need that 10 bucks to keep surviving. So I'm going to meet this person where they're at. And a lot of artists, you know, they just either don't do that, or they just don't think that way, or they're just too prideful to go. Put it this way, if the industry is a dinosaur and the age of the dinosaur is ending, you better start being a furry little rat, because that's the only one that's going to survive the ice age. You get what I'm saying?
I see what you did there.
I don't even know what I did there. But whenever I did, I tried to do it well.
I pick up the reference, and I get the point you're making. Just one last question. I'll kind of wind this down. A question I wanted to ask before we even started talking about the industry, but it makes the question more poignant to me now. I mean, you've had a place at the Christian hip-hop table for a number of years now, for at least 12 years, least as a signed artist. What's next for you? I mean, because I remember... I don't know if it was an interview or actually on a label, not to bring the comparison up again, but I think it was the back and forth between Eminem and Benzino. And he ripped on Benzino for basically using his own son to further his own career and keep his dead career alive. And I'm not saying that your career is dead, but is there a point where you hang up the microphone, you could have 10 more great albums in you, but you step back and you say, okay, now it's time for me to mentor the next generation. Is there a point where you do that, or are you already beginning to do that?
You know, honestly, I a couple years ago, I started making steps towards other stuff that I wanted to do. And part of that was I don't want to say a rebranding, but part of it was like going, okay, what are other things I can do, you know, that tie into what I'm doing already? And some of that was the hosting, you know what I'm saying? Like going out and being not only just an artist, but a host at the event.
Yeah.
Some of it was that. Some of it was like radio stuff. Some of it was TV stuff. Honestly, with the idea that I thought, man, a guy in his, or I'm not there yet, but I'm saying a guy in his late 30s, he's probably not going to be able to relate to kids. Kids won't relate to him. How's he going to keep going? But I'll be honest with you. The only people that have a problem with 30-some rappers, 20-something dudes, 30. So... What I started to realize was all my fears were unrealistic, and that for as long as I perform or not perform, I mean, I've been coaching people and mentoring people for a long time on the low, and not only that it wasn't always really intense, but some of it was just being an open ear and everything I just shared with you a few minutes ago, sharing that stuff with them. So what does it entail? I'll be honest with you, I'm as busy as ever. You know, I'm in front of as many people as I've ever been in front of. It doesn't seem like anything's slowing down for me. If anything, it's speeding up. And if anything, I'm just kind of getting known for other stuff, which is turning into other things. So what does this mean? I stopped trying to figure it out, honestly. It would have drove me crazy a long time ago if I did. So I've just found that if someone says, oh, KJ, you know, he's 40, which I'm not, but I'm just saying, if they were to say something ridiculous like that, why is he still around? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I would kind of say to them, you obviously have a problem with your own age, that you're worried about it, that it's not really about me. It's just that you're worried about turning into that age, because honestly, the people I'm in front of don't care.
Right.
If I'm gonna throw you a life preserver and drowning, I don't think you care if I'm 8 or 80.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, you look like Jay-Z is like, dude, you know, he's old.
Yeah, and granted, exactly. Hip hop is getting older, and you know the things we're worried about. So, what does that mean from here on out? I honestly don't know. I just came back from an event with 3,500 kids where I spoke and I performed and I hosted, and it went phenomenal. You know, and I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back. It just made me go, well, for what God calls, He equips, you know, and in any given week I could be there. And then the next day I could be in front of 20,000 business people. And the next day I might be in front of 100 people in some backwoods town in America. And you know what? I'm pretty happy with all of it. You know, so where does it go from here? I mean, I've made steps, you know, if maybe I'd sidestep into speaking or something like that, or, you know, I don't know, man.
Hey,
I think the more I think about it, it hurts my head, and I don't have a lot of brain cells to work with.
Don't think too hard about it. It's a good, honest answer. And I think we're all human trying to figure out where we are. I mean, like, I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to have for breakfast tomorrow. So I just asked you like a world changing question for your life. So
I would something from Whole Foods.
I'd like to go. Thanks so much again. Always a pleasure to hop on the line with you. I should call you sometime and just talk about, you know, just talk about life offline. I always love to connect with artists and just kind of quote unquote do life together. I think that's the popular term in Christian circles now. Do life. we're doing life
absolutely
together.
Doing life together, brother.
Can't wait for cell groups.
Life groups. Yes.
Life group. That's right, life groups.
Yeah, we don't call it Sunday school anymore.
I gotta up my buzzword.
But anyway, have a good night, KJ. Thanks again for taking the time. And again, I hope the album does well, not just because it's a great album, just because of the content. I love what you're doing, and I want to see you around for a number of years to come. So hope it does really, really well.
Thanks, Cal. Appreciate it, man.
All right, talk to you later.